Martin, good morning, brother. I appreciate you doing this. Nice and early in the morning.
Yeah, no, we get up early here too. Like by 4:30, where everybody's up in the house. The kids go to school, and then my wife and I, we get a little workout in before. So.
I dig it. Listen, we're going to talk football, but we're going to talk about your real football. Argentina, you were 8 or 9 the last time they won it in 86. Obviously, you're a kid, you fall in love. How do you celebrate when they beat France a couple of years ago?
Well, there's a video that my wife. So it's funny because the whole time, the whole World Cup, the only game we watched together as a family was the Saudi Arabia, where Argentina lost.
Yes, huge upset.
Huge upset, right? And then all the other games, my wife works at the school, so she would watch it in her iPad, and I'd pick the kids up early and bring them home. I said they got to watch it with me. So we were always separated.
Okay.
And then the finals, we're watching it together. And then all of a sudden, we play the best first half in the history of a World Cup. I mean, Argentina was amazing.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, France starts to come back, and my wife's like, "I can't be with you guys now." So she goes upstairs to watch it upstairs because like we got to make sure. I went back and threw on my work clothes because I'm like, I had a T-shirt on, I was nice and comfortable. I'm like, we've got to get back to so she's upstairs. I change. And everything starts to go, and then she sneaks behind us on that last penalty and gets a video of like me going crazy with my kids. I have two boys and a girl, and they're all Argentina fans too. So we went nuts. It was incredible. But going back to that '86 World Cup, that was my first. We had just moved to the United States in '85.
Okay.
So can you imagine how much I was bragging? We're like World Cup champs, and at the time we lived in upstate New York, in Delhi, New York,
Okay.
and. Not too many kids knew about soccer, but trust me, I was bragging a lot.
That's wild, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
My best friend, well, one of my best friends lives in Buenos Aires. So I've been down there a few times. When's the last time you've been back to the motherland? When's the last time?
It's been hard, with the kids playing
Of
sports, and
course.
then I'm a wimp when it comes to the cold. So our summer here is freezing over there. So we're like, our plan is to hopefully go back for Christmas one of these years, once the kids kind of slow down a little bit. But right now, Nico, as we speak, is in Hawaii for the Hawaii Bowl.
Yes.
So he comes back Christmas Day. So it's never really worked out to go back. And I don't have any family left. So, but I do miss going back because it's always nice. My brother's going in the spring with his soccer team, taking his family. So maybe we'll do that next spring. If it works out for him, then maybe we'll take the soccer team to Argentina.
What Argentinian food do you miss the most, or maybe that Florida doesn't do as well as you remember it? Because I remember I had that meat and corn soup. I forgot what it's called.
Okay.
That Locrado, whatever it's called. That was like,
That was your thing?
that was,
Yeah.
oh, I loved it down there. So what food do you miss the most, or that maybe my Florida doesn't do as well?
Well, so the thing is, nowadays you can pretty much get anything. But earlier on, when we moved, this Milanesa is the breaded steak. But then over there, they put like sauce, ham, and like ham, and then cheese on top of it. Napolitana. That's my favorite thing ever. It was fries. Sometimes they throw a fried egg on top. But we can make all that stuff here. Asado, the asado is the biggest thing. My son, Nico's like, I'm the worst. So luckily, Santiago, my younger brother, taught him how to do it right. So he takes care of that. So we can't wait for him to get back from Hawaii so we can throw something on the grill because we're not grilling out until he gets back.
Oh, that's nice, man. He's balling out in South Florida, in Hawaii for the bowl game. When's the last time he asked you for advice? Does he ever ask you for kicking advice or not really?
No, he does. He does. But the thing is, I want to give him the freedom to do it on his own. I'm here to support anytime he needs it, but we want him to experience it. He has to go through those growing pains. I mean, to play as a true freshman, kick off the whole year for the team, and then take the long field goals, that was huge. And he obviously as a competitor, he wanted every kick. And I said, just take your time. You still have a lot of time. But we're super proud of him. And the thing that we're more proud of is his hard work because he's a great role model for his younger brother and sister, because they see the amount of work he's put in. They're putting in their work to maybe get to where he's at. So that's what we're proud of. So, but he does ask me for advice, but mainly Santiago. Yeah, that's his kicking coach. I said, when it comes to kicking, Santiago's much has a much better eye than I do, when it
Okay.
comes to like the plant foot, the follow through. So he's the one that's really taught him how to kick. I'm the one that prepares his mind. I yell at him and we go at it. So I prepare his mind for anything. So anything a coach can say is nothing compared to what I've said to him. So
Two sons and a daughter. Did you lose all of them to American football or any of them play soccer?
well, Emmy's still playing soccer, but
Okay.
she's really good at flag football and loves flag football. So I'm thinking there's a chance that I may lose all three. I wanted one to be a soccer player. As a dad of kickers, you know, people are like, are you enjoying it? No, you don't enjoy it. Yeah. You're proud of them, but we're on the edge of the seat the whole game because, you know, as a kicker, it's a lonely life. Oof. You know, when you make it, everything's great, but when you miss, there's a lot of pressure. So it's not enjoyable, but we're super proud that they're doing it. You know, it's hard to explain to people.
No, I get it, man. Because listen, if you're a running back or any other position in any sport, you have the next play to compensate or make up for it. You miss a kick, now you're alone on the sidelines in your head, and you have to wait for your next chance. It is beyond stressful, man.
Yeah, I compare it really to like a keeper in soccer, you know, yeah. Like or hockey, you know, where you're like in the net, you could stop 20 shots, but then you let one easy one, and they're like, oh, you cost us the game, you know. Yeah. So that's the thing. The kicking's the same way. You can make three or four kicks, you miss the last one that matters, and then it's all, you know, you're the guy. But again, we're super proud of him for his work and excited for his future. But it is stressful to watch him kick, though.
Back to you now. What was cooler, seeing yourself on your first football card or being in a video game, being in Madden? What was cooler for you?
I think the card, you know, okay. Like just it's the video game. I guess they put the whole team, so you kind of expect it to be on the team.
Okay.
But then when you get your own personalized card, and my kids collect them now. I still get fan mail for me to sign them, so that's really cool to see. You know, like I never expected. It's funny. I have a funny story. My first as a rookie, they tell you know, give us a sample of your autograph, mm-hmm. And I said by then I said Martin Gramatic. I spelled out every letter, you know, everything. And then they're like, well, we want to sign you to a rookie car deal. I said, that's cool. Nice. They send me like 5,000 stickers that they were gonna put on the cards, and I'm like, man, it took me about 6 months to get them all signed. And then from then on, my autograph's gotten shorter. I got smarter, but yeah. So, but that rookie card was special. That first one when I got that call and then I saw it, it was pretty cool.
Because that's wild even to think about. So many guys say video game, but it's like growing up, seeing yourself on a card. Like you can just hand. It always blows my mind. Like, oh my God, you're on a football card. That's like the coolest shit.
I know, especially like when kids now still want me to sign one. I'm like, man. And everybody's, oh, you look much younger. I go, yeah, that's 25 years ago. I'm getting old. Trust me, I know.
Your story's been told, and it's actually like a little mind-blowing. You come from Argentina, this and that. You don't play football until your senior year of high school, which is, you can't even fathom, and then the career and life you went on to have. How did Kansas State even find you?
Well, first of all, like, I didn't even want to play football.
Okay.
My senior year, the school had asked me to play for years because we were the only soccer players in the town. We grew up in a small town in La Belle, Florida.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, no, I'm a soccer player. I was against, you know, I'm a soccer player. And then my senior year, I feel like, okay, well, I'll help the school out. I'll kick for a year. And then my brothers wanted to kick, so they were going to just take over after that. And as my first practice, we had a restaurant. The coach comes, oh, this kid's going to be amazing. He's going to go to the NFL. He's going to go to college. And looking back, we weren't amazing, but the kicker prior to me was an offensive lineman that kicked his toe. So anything soccer style was amazing to them, right? In a small school that nobody had ever gone D1 from our school. So they didn't know how to help get me recruited. I made 100 VHS tapes, sent it all over the country. But I kicked for a guy in Naples, Florida, that was kind of like a recruiter type. And, you know, okay. And at the time, Kansas State had their spring game, and their kicker just couldn't kick it in the end zone. And the defensive coordinators were Bob Stoop and Jim Levitt. So, I mean, talk about a coaching tree there for Bill Snyder, right? And so they were just looking for a kicker that could kick it in the end zone. And luckily, I kicked for that guy in Naples, called Coach Levitt, and said, hey, I have a kid in Florida that I could actually kick. I take my visit, which is pretty highly illegal for them to try you out in your visit. But they're like, hey, we want you to go out and kick with the long snapper and the punter. I want you guys, they want to get to know you. So I'm in the stadium kicking. I had no idea there's about 20 cameras all over the stadium.
Wow.
Recording this workout. And I had a really good workout, kicked the ball in the end zone, which that's all they really cared about. They didn't care about the field goals. And that's how it started. And then they just offered me a full ride. I literally left Manhattan with a scholarship in my hand to bring back home and review it. And I had verbally committed to Notre Dame. And I said, you know, I'm not really feeling it because I feel like I'm going to flunk out of Notre Dame. I didn't like school. So as soon as I got that offer from Kansas State, love Coach Snyder. I said, I'm switching. I'm going to Kansas State, which we had better 5 years when I was there than Notre Dame.
Hell yeah, yeah.
So I don't regret that move at all.
What shell shock hit you when you get to Manhattan, Kansas?
Nothing really at the beginning because, you know, I grew up on a farm. La Belle's like a lot of – so it didn't shock me at all. But when the winter hit, that shocked me. I'm like, I did not want to leave my dorm room. I didn't know it got this cold. You know, I'm thinking, I took my visit in, like, I think it was June, July. It was beautiful.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, that was Florida weather. Well, that's how late it was for me to sign, because there not too many people knew by playing 1 year, I didn't have a lot of people recruiting me. So when that winter hit, man, my grades dropped. Not that they were great anyways, but I didn't leave the dorm room. I hated it.
But you said the best thing. You had a hell of a run there. I think every year you guys were ranked top 20, one or two losses every year. You picked a hell of a time to get a team on the rise, man.
Oh, no, I couldn't be happier. Even now, like, my first bowl game was the Aloha Bowl in Hawaii. Yeah. And Nico is going to the Hawaii Bowl 25 years later. So it's pretty incredible. Yeah, no, we had a chance to, 1 year, we lost in the Big 12 championship game. It's not, if we win that game, we play for the national championship. And we lost to Texas A&M. So, yeah, so it was a great 5 years worth of bowl games. I couldn't be happier to have picked it. Besides the cold, everything else was awesome.
What game means the most, beating Nebraska or beating Kansas? Which one do you need to win that game?
Well, at the time that I was there, it was beating Nebraska, because we hadn't beaten them in, I think it was like 28 years. Mm-hmm. And Michael Bishop, obviously, stud. You know, we beat them at home. And that's when they tear the goalpost down. I actually have they cut it up and gave all the players a little piece of one. I have a piece of the goalpost when we tore down the goalpost when we beat Nebraska. I think it was the first time in 28 years or something like that. And Kansas, at the time, they weren't really that good. Yeah. So we beat them all 5 years that I was there. But Nebraska and Colorado was a powerhouse at the time as well, with Rashan Salaam and Cordell Stewart,
yeah.
Yeah, so those guys, those teams were the ones that we just couldn't get over. And then all of a sudden, that 1 year, we beat both of them.
College football fans knew you, but when you have that famous 65-yard kick, that's when you went viral before going viral. Do you remember what team it was against?
Yes, Northern Illinois. Yeah.
When did you know that, like, oh my God, that is world famous now? That went viral.
Well, I wish I would have kicked it today. Maybe I would have really gone viral. And back then, nobody could, you know, it was on ESPN and that's it. But so it's funny, because I wasn't even ready to kick, because we were up by like 44 points before half. It was one of those games that's kind of like a preseason game where you play a smaller school to try to get. And John Snyder was Bill Snyder's son, who was kind of helping out. He's the one that calls the timeout, and they're like, hey, we're going to kick a couple guys come over. We're going to kick a field goal. I go, what? I'm tying my shoes. My shoes were literally untied. I was ready to go into halftime. And, you know, kickers wear super tight shoes. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I got to get my feet ready. And like, I'm tying them real fast. I get on the field. I have no idea what the distance is, because I was just took a couple warm-up shots in the net. Wow. And the thing is, I could tell it was far, because, you know, you can tell kind of where the goalposts are. There's far. But it's probably a good thing that I didn't know, because I didn't overkick it. I just swung smooth. I swung hard, but smooth. If I knew, 65, I'm going to have to maybe put a little more, and then you may pull it. So, it was one of those hits that you hit clean. And as soon as I hit it, I knew it was in. I mean, you could see it go straight. I thought, I got it. So, because I didn't know the distance, but I found out afterwards how far it was.
Kicking, like you said earlier, it's so mental. You only played 1 year of high school football, and now you're in college playing on the highest level. What adjustments did you have to make, or what were you doing wrong that you were like, oh, crap, I thought I just had to kick? Was it a big adjustment or not really?
No, I had to adjust my whole everything about kicking, because when I started, I didn't have a kicking coach. LaBelle didn't have a kicker. They never had a kicker besides, like, so I said, crazy. That old lineman with a toe. So nobody could teach me. So I was just literally kicking a soccer ball through the uprights. When I get to Kansas State, my extra points were one step, because that's all I really needed to get an extra point. So I was kind of placing the ball in the goal instead of kicking it.
Okay.
And that's where Sean Snyder kind of helped me. He said, look, every kick has to be the same. Your extra point and your 50 yards have to be the same. You have to have one swing in motion. So that's where I learned basically the art of kicking, because at the time I was just putting the ball through the uprights without knowing what I was doing. And like I said, Kansas State wanted me more for kickoffs. I just, you know, got the ball and just kicked the crap out of it. That's really what I was doing. And then thanks to Sean, you know, he helped me kind of have my form, my routine, and my swing. So that's kind of where I perfected the kicking. But before college, I was just kicking a soccer ball through the uprights, basically.
That's interesting. Now we have – you can go to 2029. There's mock drafts for every round. Back then, did you have any idea where you were going to go? And tell me your draft day story. Like, are you watching it from the beginning? Like, okay, where am I going to go? Any inkling of where you might go?
Yes, it worked, because you talk to coaches, you know, and then they have the mock draft. So at study hall, I never studied. So I just spent the whole time looking at looking at mock drafts. Who has me here? And then if somebody has me in the fifth round, I was getting pissed. If somebody had me, you know, second round, like, oh, good job, Mel Kiper. You know, so the range was second to fourth round. And then I get a call from the special teams coach from the Bucks, Marciano, Coach Marciano. He said, look, here's what – this is right before the draft. This is what we're thinking. If we want first round, obviously not a chance. Yeah. Second round, we want Sean King, the quarterback. If he's not available, we may take you in the second round. Wow. If he's available, we're going to take him, and then we're going to wait to take you in the third round. So I kind of had an idea, but at the end of the day, could you trust him? Do you know – or is that something, you know, just to, like, throw other people off, you know, whatever the case is. That's what he was – they were telling, and I was hoping that Sean King would get drafted to somebody else. I was like, yes, somebody, please take Sean. I want to go to the second round. But Sean was there. They took Sean, and then come the third round. What I was really worried about is that was the year the expansion, the Browns were the expansion team.
Yeah, so, Tim Couch went number one, yeah.
Yeah, so they got a first and a 15th every round. So they have the first pick in the round and a mid pick. So I'm thinking over two or three picks, I do not want to go to Cleveland. You know, obviously, if it's a full round, financially, it's a big difference. So you go second round to the Browns, and then you deal with it. Instead of, like, two picks to Tampa, that financially would have been nothing, really. I'd rather be in Tampa. And my brother was going to USF in Tampa. Santiago, my youngest brother, ended up playing at USF. So I wanted to come home to Florida, which the Bucks were the team. And I watched, you know, Sapp, Warwick Dunn, these guys that I had watched in college too a little bit, and then I wanted to be on this team. And so for me to be get drafted by a team that I wanted to get drafted, it was my brother kicking at USF and then my younger brother playing there as well. It was just incredible. I just couldn't ask for a better spot.
Yeah, that's the dream. How'd the call happen? Are you watching it on TV when your name comes up, or does the call happen beforehand?
So we're watching it on TV. And then you get the call, and it's, for me, it didn't hit until I saw my name on the screen. You know, like, because I get the call from Rich McKay, the general manager, basically welcoming to the team. And then he said, I'm going to let you talk to Coach Dungy, who was an amazing person. I mean, wow. I would tell Coach Dungy, he ruined it for me, because every time I played for any other coach, I would compare him to him, and nobody, like, gets even close. I mean, such a great person. But so then he's like, welcome to the team. We can't wait to see you. And a couple of days later, I'm back in Florida in the rookie minicamp. But it was incredible. Like, just that call was like, talk about that World Cup celebration. That's what that phone call was like. I mean, we're all going crazy, and just one of those phone calls that I'll never forget.
I'm always fascinated by rookies and stuff going into the locker room. You're going into a locker room now with Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, Mike Alstott, John Lynch. Do you go around introducing yourself? Like, hi, I'm Martin. Like, how does that first interaction happen?
Man, I was scared. I was like, man, I heard, you know, Warren Sapp's, you know, big guy. If I make him mad, he might eat me. But they were like the nicest, the greatest people. They welcomed me right in. You know, they loved my celebration, which I think that helped me kind of fit in with the guys. And the other thing is, being a former soccer player, yeah, I was in the facility working out. Not that I loved the gym, but I was there, you know, because I want to be around the team. It's not like, you know, prior to me coming in the league, a lot of the kickers would, you know, kick and go play golf, you know, I hate golf. I'm like the worst golfer in the world. So I was there, and I think they appreciated that. In the off season, I would train in the facility all off season. I didn't have a personal trainer. I did towards the end, but then I still go to the facility, and I just wanted to be around the guys. The locker room's the most fun, and that's what I miss the most. So I think they understood that, you know, and then I had a good rookie year, which I think that helped, because I felt a lot of pressure, because I, like, can you imagine being picked in the third round and sucking? Then these guys are like, we could have got a linebacker, we could have got a, you know, somebody that could actually help the team, and now we got a kicker that can't help us. So I did everything humanly possible to make every kick that year special.
Any rookie hazing?
Well, luckily, Coach Dungy didn't believe in that, didn't allow that. But wow. I almost did get killed by all the offensive linemen, because every rookie's supposed to provide breakfast once the regular season starts, and it goes in order of the draft.
Okay.
So my time comes, and the facilities at the Bucks were not the best. We were in the original facility. We had a hallway where the food was just set out, catered. We ate in our locker. We didn't have meeting rooms. I mean, a team meeting room. We met in the locker room. So we called it the woodshed, because that was like literally what it was. And the guys were like, hey, we're tired of the same cater. Make sure you bring us something different. And I'm like, all right, no problem, guys, whatever. And then what do? I go to the Jose, which is the same guy. I go, hey, Jose, do me a favor. Can you cater this, but make it different so the guys don't know it's you? And she goes, yeah, we'll take care of you. Jose, probably lazier than me, does the same thing. No, I'm just kidding. Instead of me going out finding into something else, he's like, yeah. And I guess the guys were so pissed and like they didn't like what they brought. So the O-line was looking for me. They were going to take me to the goalpost and like just, I don't know, throw crap on me. And I'm like, I'm hiding in my locker. I'm like, I'm not leaving my locker until practice. And then I'm going home before they catch me. And all of a sudden, Sapp gets in the middle of that locker room, starts screaming. Nobody met, you know, I don't know if you can cuss in your podcast.
Yeah, of course.
That's what he said. Nobody fucks with my kicker and blah, blah. And he's going off. And like, then I come out of there like Mighty Mouse, you know, like, who's going to touch me now? And so it was great because that's when I knew Sapp had my back. And the guys were all cool about it too. But they, and then the best part about that whole story is we end up, I end up having 4 field goals and we end up, if it wasn't for Donnie, it would have been 12-9, but Donnie had a pick 6 at the end that ruined, you know, saying that I had a game winner. So I go, I told Donnie, I said, you ruined the game of my life as a rookie. You ruined it with a pick 6. It was a cool week. From almost getting killed by the offensive lineman to winning and beating Atlanta with 250-plus field goals, was pretty cool.
In your second year, you make the Pro Bowl when it meant something in Hawaii. When you're there, are you taking this all in like, holy crap, look who I'm around? Like, are you taking in like fanboying out a little bit? Like, look who I'm just hanging out with in Hawaii at the Pro Bowl. Like, does that happen or not really for you?
Oh, no, it did big time because these guys that I thought I'd never meet, you know, like, because in pregame or a postgame, you know, those Hall of Famers, you know, Pro Bowlers aren't going to talk to a second year kicker. No. Like, who are you, you know? So there, I felt like, okay, I'm at par with you guys a little bit where I can at least say hello, you know? So, yeah, to see like Randy Moss, I think Terrell Owens, I can't remember. I mean, there were so many guys. We had 9 Buccaneers go too, you know? So that was cool because it was easy for me to fit into the locker room knowing that I had, you know, a third of the team was Bucs, you know? So, and then Sapp is the reason why I made the Pro Bowl because I feel like my rookie year, I got screwed over the Pro Bowl because I made more kicks and I didn't miss any extra points, but they took a veteran. Back then, like you said, it meant more. So they weren't putting a lot of rookies in. You had to earn your stripes, basically. And they took Jason Hansen, who's a phenomenal kicker. I'm not taking anything away from him, but I had a better year my rookie year than stats-wise. Mm-hmm. So I was mad. I was pissed that I didn't get to go my rookie year. But Sapp came out and publicly said, if they don't take my kicker, I'm not going to the Pro Bowl. Because I had, I think it was 550-plus field goals that year. So I had really good stats. But I think Sapp's push, they wanted Sapp more than they wanted me there. So they're like, okay, let's bring them both. But I always thank Sapp for that, because if it wasn't for that public – you know, support, I don't know if I would have got in.
You know, I had Brad Johnson on and we talked about the legendary 2002 season. When did you know, like, okay, we are special?
I don't, Brad, again, awesome guy. And I'm sure you got the, you know, when you talk to him, the most humble.
Too humble. Freaking. I'm like, bro, you're too humble. Own it. Yeah.
Nah, he's the best. He's the best. He taught me a lot. And my locker was right next to his. So it was cool to see how professional and how nice he was, and still what a competitor, because a lot of people confuse niceness with weakness. It's like, no, he's a nice guy, but he'll kick your ass when he has to. So I love Brad. So I just feel like the synergy that we had, that brotherhood that we had, I never felt that ever on a team. You know, we all really cared for each other. Everybody, you know, had that same common goal where like, we're going to do whatever it takes. Our defense was obviously the best defense in football. And then Brad was just that leader that we needed to get us through the, you know, past the hump. And then obviously with Gruden's energy, that was a little spark as well offensively. It was just a special team. I don't know if there was a day or a game. I do have, like, memorably, like, my favorite game of my career was that Carolina game that we win 12-9 with 4 field goals. But we kicked 3 field goals in the fourth quarter. We were, you know, so special teams came up big. Brad was actually hurt that game, and then Rob Johnson started, and then Rob ends up getting hurt, and then Sean King steps in to get us in field goal range. So it took every single player to get that game, and I feel for me, that was the game that gave me the confidence personal to like, okay, I can make every kick for this team, you know, because we had been struggling with a long snapper. Our starting long snapper had gotten hurt. We brought a guy back for 2 games that didn't work out too well, and then we bring Ryan Benjamin, who played at USF, who I knew well. So I told Bisaccia, I said, you got to bring this kid. He can snap. But when you look at him, he looks like a bum. So he's like, no, he doesn't look like an NFL long snapper. I'm not bringing him in. So 2 weeks later, he had no choice because the other guy that looked like an NFL guy was shit, you know. So he's like, okay, now we gotta bring Ryan in. So I always tell Ryan, you're welcome for that Super Bowl ring.
That game has been dissected over and over. Just how prepared did Gruden have you guys? Did you guys go in there like, oh, we are so prepared for this?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Who would have thought that we would play the Raiders? You know, because a lot of times the Raiders get a lot of criticism for not changing anything, you know, as far as their offense. And like, why would you change anything when everything was working for them when Gruden was there? I mean, obviously it worked good enough to get to the Super Bowl. They were just unlucky that they're facing the Bucs, their former coach that knew every single play. So those guys, the defense was elite. But now, on top of that, you kind of know what's coming. Like, it's unfair how good it was. But that's the preparation, though, because even though we knew or Gruden knew every play, our defensive guys had to learn them and know what they – so it's not that it was that easy. They still had to prepare and had to be ready to know what's coming. And but we had great leadership on that defense. I mean, you start with Sapp and Lynch, and Brooks, that guy – talk about the nicest guy you'll ever meet. But I always tell people that's where you can separate, you know, the white line, you know, like off the field, nicest guy you'll ever meet. On the field, I never want to go against him because he'll take your head off. But that's what you need. And I always tell kids that, you know, I want you to be great people off the field. But on the field, you got to be dogs. You play to win. There's in my family, there's never been a participation medal. I've never taught them that because in life, you don't have those participation medals. You know, so, but that's the things that we learned from Coach Dungy. You know, he wanted us to be great people off the field, but then on the field, we had to go win. And that's the type of guys that we had. That locker room was special.
12 points in the Super Bowl. Beforehand, I'm sure you knew it. Was a big deal made that you were the first Argentinian to play in the Super Bowl? Was that a big deal?
Yes, I felt it, and I love the support that I got from Argentina because the one regret, and I always tell because I was so nervous, obviously, the whole week. Yeah. I forgot my Argentina flag in the hotel room because I would have wanted to bring it out, and I didn't have anything Argentina. The only thing I wore a undershirt, and I put a number 10 in the back for Maradona. You know, that was our guy. You know, that
of
was
of course.
And so that's the only thing that I could relate. Other than that, I forgot the flag and I was so upset. But, you know, when you're like thinking of the game, some of those things just kind of slipped my mind. But it was cool because I did a ton of interviews after. There's a really special one on ESPN with John Sutcliffe, you know, the Monday Night Football guy that's going viral now. That was his first year broadcasting. And I'm freaking cussing up a storm in Spanish, you know, and on ESPN. And he's like, man, I thought I was going to get fired and you were going to get fined after that interview. But it was just raw emotions. You know, I had a former teammate say that we were going to lose by 3. And I took it as I was going to miss the kick. Maybe he meant that they were going to kick a game winner. Yeah. I took it the wrong way. So I'm like, I just exploded, man. That came to my mind. I said, you know, fuck you, we won.
How was the after party? I was privileged. It's one of my humble brags to be at the Giants Super Bowl after party. My best friend was roommates with a former Giant. I got into the party. It was the craziest thing I've ever experienced. How crazy was that in San Diego when you guys went in?
Well, it was cool. There's Keyshawn has his own Hollywood party. And then I think I think Sapp might have gotten flown away to go to Disney. So some of the guys weren't there, but most of the guys at the hotel, we just had a team hotel party. I remember kind of being laid back, you know, for me. I mean, I, the thing is, I didn't drink. I didn't go out when I played. I just was too focused, baby. I didn't get to enjoy it as much as other guys. But it was just a great time because you had all the coaches' families, you know, everybody that was the reason why we won that Super Bowl was there. So that's what made it special. You know, you saw the behind the scenes people that most people have no idea, never heard of, but those guys that in those, you know, those people that are so important in winning a Super Bowl. So it was an awesome party just to see and be with everybody.
You just said behind the scenes as a kicker. We said earlier, it's very similar to boxing. It's a lonely sport. You're the guy. The focus is only on you. You know, how do you deal mentally when you're not having a good day, a good few games, when you get into a rut? Do you just outkick it? How do you mentally deal with that? Because it seems like you're always in your own head.
Right. No, that's the toughest thing about being a kicker, especially because, like you said earlier, like a quarterback or a running back, you have the next play. right to get back in. With a kicker, if you miss the game winner, for example, now you have a week. And if you miss a big kick in the playoffs or something, now you have a whole offseason to think about. But it's just about trying to get your mind to think positive and just take, for me, it was more obviously thinking positive, but also take my muscle memory. Just then you're kicking off balls that your body kind of takes over. And the second you doubt yourself, you're screwed. So that's the thing, just kind of being positive and just kicking, you're kicking so much that you kick your way out of that slump, you know? So, and then all it takes is one big kick, you know, for me, there's a broadcast and I didn't even remember this. Like when we did win that game 12-9 against Carolina, the commentators, I got a 50 yarder by the struggling Grammatic or something like that. I'm like, I don't remember struggling, but in their eyes, I guess I was. But I had missed, and then we had the long snapper situation, so we had a bobble snap. But I had missed a couple, and one got blocked, I believe. So there, overall, we were struggling. But then a game like that will give you so much confidence that now I felt like I wasn't going to miss all year. You know, you just go in there like, put me in from wherever, I'm making this. You know, that's the type of where one game or one kick can give you that confidence just to carry you through the whole season. I feel like Adam Vinatieri is the perfect example. Mm-hmm. Those kicks, you know, for the Super Bowl, that gave him so much confidence and momentum that it carried him to be the greatest kicker in the history of the NFL. Not to say that he wasn't if he didn't make those kicks. I'm just saying, I guarantee you those kicks were such pressure, such big kicks, that elevated him to be the great kicker that he was.
Afterwards, after Tampa, living the dream back home, it's Indianapolis, New England, Dallas, New Orleans. How difficult is that coming home to your family? Like, hey, to your wife, hey, hon, we're moving to New Orleans. We're going to New England. Is that how? Because we don't think it. As a fan, I'm like, just go sign, you know, so and so. Go sign Soto. Who cares? How difficult is that on the family? Like to go bouncing around.
She became a really good Packer quick. So yeah. So it was easier for us because Nico was a year old. Okay. So it wasn't like you're moving schools. So when it becomes more difficult now when your kids are older and maybe the player has to go on his own and has to leave the family behind because now they have to finish school. So for us, it was just difficult, the fact that I was getting cut or getting released. And a lot of it, I had three adductor surgeries. So after that, my body just didn't feel right. And it was a matter of like me staying healthy more than staying confident, you know? So it was a struggle because now I spent more time in the training room, therapy, rehabs, cortisone shots. And it became not fun anymore because it was like, man, I'm more worried about will I stay healthy. But those were phone calls that I remember. New England, I strained my groin in practice, and I get a call to meet with Belichick. So before I even go meet with Belichick, I'd call my wife. I said, hey, I'm getting cut. This was like 9 a.m. By the time I get home at 11 a.m., the car's packed. We're driving back to Florida. So she became really efficient at packing everything. And by then we had Nico. So the crazy story is I was out for a year after a groin surgery, and the 2005, I didn't play. I'm literally in the delivery room. I haven't got a call from anybody. So I'm thinking, okay, my career's over. Nobody's calling. I thought I would get a call because of what I had done in Tampa, you know, even though towards the end it didn't end great, but I was, you know, I felt I had enough, you know, curriculum to like get more calls, nothing.
Wow.
Vinatieri leaves New England to go to the Colts. And they're looking for a kicker. So we're in the delivery room, and I get a call from my agent. It's like, hey, New England wants to bring you in for a workout. I go, listen, I'm a little busy right now. Can you tell them that, you know, my wife's giving birth, our first child. Can I go tomorrow or 2 days? He calls back, hey, they're going to give you a week. So take care of your family, come in a week, which was great because I hadn't kicked the ball in months because I was already pissed. I was mad that I wasn't getting the phone call. So I'm like, I'm done. I'm not working out anymore. Like one of those were like a stupid.
Yeah.
But so it gave me a chance to go out and kick for 3 days. So I'm kicking 100 balls a day, just trying to get in rhythm. End up going to the workout. I do well. And they signed me there. So 2 weeks after my wife gave birth to Nico, we're on our way to New England. You know, he hated the car seat after that because we drove. But yeah, so those are difficult stories when you don't get the call. But then when you get it, and you're not ready. That's why I always tell the kids, you know, the younger players, be ready because you never know when you get that call. The same thing happened with Dallas. Dallas, they had Vanderjack. You know, Vanderjack at the time was the most accurate kicker in the history of the NFL. He was the highest paid kicker when Dallas signed him. They're paying him a ton of money. I get a call. This is like during Thanksgiving and my birthday week. And I didn't want to go to the workout. I told the girl on the phone, I said, look, why would I want to go to the workout? You have the highest paid kicker in the league. They're not going to cut him. You're wasting my time. You know, I have a my son. It's going to be my first birth. I'm giving her all every excuse in the book to not go to the workout. He's like, and then on top of that, you only have a one-way ticket. When am I coming home? I just want to know when I'm coming home. I'm arguing. He finally convinces me to go. And I go to the workout. I have a good workout, which was odd because when I get to the workout, it was just myself and a kid from the arena league that played for the Dallas owners, Jerry Jones' arena team. Okay. It was just the two of us, which is kind of odd. Usually I have four or five veterans working out. I have the workout, and they're like, Bill Parcells comes over, we're going to sign you. I'm like, I was in shock. I'm like, what, to kick off? Because I had kicked off for Vanderjack in Indy for Coach Dungy, because Vanderjack accurate, but didn't have a strong leg. He's like, no, you're going to be our guy. I'm like, holy shit, like, I never expected that. I called my wife, I said, hey, they just signed me. What? The next day, she's driving to Dallas with Santiago, my youngest brother, and Nico. So that's how quick everything happens, you know. And, so it was great because I know you said you're a Giants fan. My most memorable kick of my career was beating the Giants with a field goal on Sunday Night Football because I didn't know the rivalry. Mm-hmm. You know, being a soccer player, I didn't know all these big rivalries.
Of course not, yeah.
I didn't know the importance of that kick because that put us in first of that division. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was Sunday Night Football, like the big deal. Sunday, like a lot of unknown for me. Yeah. I didn't know. The only thing I knew is if I missed that kick, Parcells would go boot my butt back to Tampa. So, so it was pretty cool experience because as a dad, that was my first game winner, and I'll never forget it. You know, it was away, but when I come in home and just giving Nico a hug because that was like for me one of those where I wanted my kids to see me play, even though he doesn't remember. But at least I have a couple photos with him with a Cowboys uniform. So and then obviously when I went to the Saints, but that was one of the most special games just because of being a dad. That was my first time kicking as a dad.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Sorry to be your Giants, though.
Yeah, well, of course. I probably cursed you and probably said very mean things about you.
Sure. That's all right. We're all good now.
It's crazy you play from Dungy, who's like the most serene, calm guy, to Gruden, Parcells, Belichick. What a different like level roller coaster seesaw of coaches, right?
Yeah, they're very different personality, but they're such perfectionists and hard workers that you know you and the thing is they're so you know where you stand with these type of coaches. You know, you don't want a coach that you can't trust. You know, these guys, you know if you're good, you know if you're not good. You know, with Dungy, as quiet as he is, as calm as he is, you know exactly where you stand, and you don't ever want to let him down. He's such a good person, and he believes in you so much as a person that you never want to let him down, where the other guys may, you know, come at you a little bit more, but the kick coaches usually leave the kickers alone. They leave the screaming to the special teams, because Joe Marciano, who I have an awesome relationship now, but I wanted to kill him my rookie year, but he made my week so miserable that when I got to Sunday, it was easy. And that was him preparing me for Sunday. And I appreciate it now. At the time, I wanted to kill the guy. But now, I tell him, thank you all the time. Man, you had me more prepared than I could ever be for Sunday because I had seen everything. I had gone through everything. Mentally, a game winner in a game was nothing compared to dealing with him during the week. So it was everybody's personality is different, but they try to get the best out of every player.
Your soccer celebrations, they were like, you can tell they were like legit, came from the heart. It wasn't like you weren't putting on a show. How excited are you now that 2026, there's going to be soccer, the World Cup here in the States? Are you like excited for that? You flipping out for that?
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. No, and those, like you said, those celebrations, for me, I was kicking, scoring goals for my team, you know?
Yeah.
And if people ask me, did you practice it? I had no idea. There's some that I look back, I'm like, man, that looks so bad. Like, what the hell were I doing? But it was just like I wanted to help my team, and I got excited that I could help my team. But, yeah, for the World Cup to come to the States, I can't. I love Pochettino, too. I'm glad we finally got a coach. I wasn't a big fan of Berhalter. I feel like he made the team soft. So this guy, you know, he's going to make them hard, and they're going to fight. You know, that's what you want. So I'm excited for the U.S. and obviously for Argentina.
Are you still coaching? I know you were coaching indoor soccer. Are you still coaching?
Yeah, so the indoor soccer league folded, so I'm not doing that anymore, but I'm coaching my daughter. So I've always coached my kids. Like Nico, I started coaching him when he was like three. So when I tell you mentally he's prepared, he's heard everything, you know. When it comes to like the way I speak to my kids, I'm more of Gruden. Mm-hmm. And then when I become a dad, I'm more of a Dungy, you know. So I take both both of their personalities, but as a dad, one way, but as a coach, because I expect more from my kids than anybody, because a lot of times, you know, you hear these parents, oh, daddy coach, just to entitle their kids. Yeah. I was the opposite. You better freaking earn it or you're going to sit your ass on the bench. And when Nico was playing football and was missing some of the soccer practice, I'd bring him off the bench. I said, you don't deserve to start because you're not here every practice. Not because he didn't deserve as a player, because he was a really good soccer player, but I have to send a message. If you miss practice, you can't start. So Nico was missing practice because of football, not because he was sitting at home playing video games. But so my kids were on the bench the minute they're not doing what they're supposed to. But luckily, I have very coachable kids, and they take after their mom, you know, with that work ethic.
Yeah, I love the non-studying, non-work ethic you keep saying. As a retired guy, you're involved in so much stuff, and you were doing the Spanish broadcasting too. How much work goes into that? Because I've had a lot of broadcast guys on. How difficult is that to, like, you're not just showing up at a stadium, you're doing, like, legit research on it, and you're not a big study guy. So was that different?
Well, the cool thing about doing the Spanish is our audience is learning, because the play-by-play, Carlos had never done football before. He's done play-by-play soccer, baseball. He's done every sport but football. So it was nice because he was learning on the fly as well. So we were all learning together. We were all teaching. But because you need to know who the players are. You need to know what their strengths are. And now we've added Santiago, my younger brother, to do the sideline reporting, and he does a ton of research. He's like our research guy, so he knows everything, what's going on before and after, and so I'm excited. It's always awesome to work with Santiago. Santiago's 7 years younger. He was like a son when I was, you know, growing up. We didn't have the best childhood as far as like our father, so I was always the protective older brother. Now he's the protective younger brother, so it's pretty cool we have that relationship, but to be able to work with him is awesome. But we do a lot of work, you know, because you obviously don't want to sound dumb either. Like, you know, especially a kicker. Like, I don't know all the plays like Tony Romo can predict, you know.
Yeah.
So I have to study a little bit harder just to know what each route is or what everything's that's going on. But it's gotten me back involved with the Bucs. But before I started, I did the broadcast. Yes, I would follow the Bucs. I would watch the game if I could. But my kids were involved in so many sports that you really couldn't watch every game. Now I schedule everything around the Bucs games because I have to work them. So it made it where I can be even a more of a fan than I was, because now I'm there every game.
One more thing about Dungy, because didn't he make all you guys do like foundations? You have the Grammatica Family Foundation. Didn't he make all you guys get into charity? And are you still doing that? Because I know it was for veterans and stuff too, right? What you were doing.
Yes. Yeah, so in our contract, it had, and I don't remember if it was two or three events that you had to do charitable events representing the Bucs. That was part of the contract. But he encouraged a lot of guys to have their foundation to do stuff in the community. And I remember my rookie year, Brooks Bunch. And I'm thinking, like, what is this? And then I was talking to one of our public relations. Like, yeah, Derek, you know, does stuff for kids. And he's taking him to Africa. I'm like, what is this? Oh, it's a foundation. Because in college, you really, at the time, we didn't have time to do charitable work.
Yeah, of course.
We went to school to practice, back to school, study hall. So there was no time. So I didn't really know what giving back was until I came to Tampa, and Dungy led the way. Because when you talk about somebody that walks the walk, I mean, Tony Dungy is the guy that, everybody knows how ultra religious he is. But he never pushes it on anybody. He leads by example, and you just follow because he's such a good person. So that's what I love about Coach Dungy. It's not like he's down your throat, like, hey, you have to do this, you have to read the Bible, you have to believe. No, you just know what he is and you want to be more like him, you know. So, but he encouraged a lot of the guys to do stuff in the community, but all the leaders did, you know. I still play in Derek Brooks' charity golf tournament every year. Mike Alsta has a charity golf tournament locally every year that I play in. So, and you know how much I hate golf, but I'll do it for those guys. But so that's the thing, you know, he encouraged all of us to give back. And that at the time when I was playing, it was the Grammatica Family Foundation, but I did a lot of stuff with the Shriners Hospital for kids. And then through my construction company that I had, we transitioned over. We still did stuff with the Shriners, but more for veterans, you know, build homes for veterans. So now what we're doing full homes, we're doing remodels, anything that has to do with veterans. Coming from Argentina, I know what my family didn't have any freedom. And the freedom that we have in this country because of our military, I'm always going to be thankful. I mean, to know that I didn't know what football was. I never know it existed.
Crazy.
And then to be able to win a Super Bowl, talk about the American dream. So I'm always going to be thankful to our military. So that's why it means so much that the community supports us and helps us build these homes and assist the veterans that need it so much. So yeah, I'm super proud of our foundation because we And we say we, but it's because of the community. You know, the whole community comes together, and I love what we're doing with it.
That's beautiful. Listen, we're 2 days before Christmas. I've had you on for an hour. Are you ready to finish up with some quick hit questions?
I'm good to go, man. I'm good. Yes, yes.
You come up to New York, not now when it's 5 degrees out, but you come up in the summer. You and I are at a bar. Who's the coolest person in your phone that if you texted them, they would text you back? You want to impress everyone in the bar. Who are you going to text? Be like, yo, I'm boys with so-and-so.
Where's that?
That's such a good answer.
Right back, man. He's quick, too. Quick trigger. He'll text right back. As a matter of fact, for Copa America and World Cup, he would call me or FaceTime me. Copa America, he was in Colombia. So I was like jealous. I'm watching it on TV. He's at a bar in Colombia. Sap would be the guy.
Coolest piece of memorabilia that you own?
I have a Derek Brooks signed jersey, personalized, Warren Sapp personalized jersey, and then I have a Barry Sanders. And then the top one now that I have is a Messi signed jersey. So those are I'm not a collector, but those are special. The Messi one is special because, for us now, he's our guy. You know, in Argentina, I love Messi. So, that one's pretty cool. I don't have his number, though.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Messi or Maradona?
Both. I'll never choose.
Fans never do it, yeah.
Yeah, no, growing up. And I hated how much criticism Messi got from Argentina at the time because he won everything with Barcelona and Argentina. I at one point almost hated him.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that he was able to win it. But that shows the perseverance that you have to have because he could have quit the national team and never come back. And he's like, gave it one more chance and then won everything with him. So I'm so happy for him.
Last show you binged watched.
Oh man, now you're putting me on the spot. Let me see. I'm an addict. Once I start, I just watched the Senna, the documentary. Amazing. The Formula One driver. Mm-hmm. I remember him when he had the accident. Like, it kind of gives you chills and brings you, like, it's just so sad. Such an icon that the way it ended. But that was one of that. But as far as show, Longmire, I just watched that.
Okay.
I was walking around with my iPad. My wife's like, "What are you doing? Are you 5 years old?" I was like, I got to finish this episode before I leave the house. But that was fun. I love Westerns too.
You still sign autographs. You still take pictures. How about the last time you asked someone for a picture? You see someone, what celebrity or someone did you see like, yo, can I get a picture with you?
I won't even do it. You know what I do? I have my kids if they want to do it. I feel like, so even Messi, we met Messi a few times. I don't have a picture with Messi. I kind of regret it now. But I have my boys.
Okay.
You know, when they were little. I'm gonna ask a picture for them for sure. But I don't know. I feel as an adult former player, I feel like I don't know. I feel like it's like we're like what are you doing? But it's Messi. So next time I see Messi, I'm definitely taking a picture. I feel bad that I never did. But I'm so happy that my boys, my daughter's so mad at me because she was a baby, so I couldn't bring her in the locker room. So we went the last Copa America in the States.
Yeah.
A friend of mine was doing the logistics for the team, so we followed the team. We went to New York. We went to, I think it was Chicago, Houston. We were all over. We went to the finals. And we were able to visit the team in the hotel. And I have a picture with Messi, my boys. And I gave him a jersey, a Gramatica jersey.
Oh,
and
there's a picture
in the hallway of the team hotel. But I didn't get in. I took it. Next time I think I need to jump in. I need to jump in. But I think my wife and my Santiago might make fun of me. So that's why. Looking back, I'm like, don't do it. They're going to make fun of you.
How about this one? Last one. It's 2 a.m. You get home. What is your go-to snack? You can be fat. You're not going to be healthy. What are you eating at 2 in the morning watching the Western on TV?
My wife keeps me on a strict diet. She's very mean when it comes to that. No, we try to stay healthy here, but yeah. I don't know. What do I like? I don't know. It's tough. I don't really eat junk. I try not to eat junk. But I used to, before gluten-free, I'm gluten-free now, but Kit Kats were my thing. I love Kit Kats. Now I can't because they have, you know, their flour. But yeah. I maybe some peanut M&Ms or something like that. But we try to eat super
healthy. Yeah, me too. Before I go, I'll tell you, when I went to Argentina, I went to a Boca – no, not Boca game. Yes, Boca game.
It better be Boca. If not, I'm hanging up on
you. No, it was definitely Boca because we went down with the colorful houses. That was the craziest experience. They didn't play River. It was a regular league game. It was the craziest game. I've been to Yankee World Series games, Knicks playoff games. The atmosphere there was addicting. It was the craziest I've ever seen a stadium, a Boca game. It was like you couldn't even try to tell people and explain what that experience was, man.
Can you imagine like a Boca River game though?
No, I couldn't. I couldn't.
So, well, the last time we went to Argentina, I brought my wife, and she's, you know, Amer she speaks fluent Spanish, Argentine accent, by the way, because now she wasn't allowed to be in my house. And blonde hair, blue eyes. And I bring her to the game, and people are like, "What the hell are you doing? You're crazy." And I bring the kids, you know, the boys were all there, because my grandma was 95, so we wanted to go visit her,
Oh.
and she the great grandson. And we're like, the atmosphere amazing, but she was freaking out because the away team gets to go off, and then you as the home team wait an hour. Like, what's going on? Well, because if not, there could be riots, there could be fights. And she, you know, we're used to like popcorn and chips here in the States, and you go get your snack over there. It's like, no. And then so yeah, that was an awesome experience for her to see and my kids to see, because I have a picture when I was 3 years old in Bombonera, La Bombonera, inside the stadium. So to
Wow.
be able to, and I was able to take the team picture. You know how they do that? So they brought me in, they gave me a plaque, which it was the team that I loved, I wanted to play for. Now they're recognizing me on the field. It was like a surreal experience. But it was the time of like, there's no iPhones back then. So I didn't have any photos at all of that whole, just the ones we took on the site, on the stands. Now, and I did an Instagram live during the pandemic. They started reaching out to like, you know, people, who can we talk to that? You know, so I did one with a Boca reporter, and I said, look, I'll do this, but the one thing I got, I'm going to give you the date that I was at. I need to find this team photo, because if not, I'm not doing it. I got to put a little pressure on him.
Yeah, of course.
15 minutes, he sends me a WhatsApp with a picture. Because he knows the team photographer, and with the date they found it. So I'm like, okay, now we can do the thing. But it was cool to have that, because I had Nico in my arms. And then it was
Oh.
Riquelme was there, Palermo. That was like the era when like they had the studs, you
Oh
know?
yeah, those are some heavy hitters, bro. That's super cool.
Yeah. So that was one of those pictures that I'll never forget too.
Bro, this was so much fun. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for doing it. Early Sunday morning, man. This was a blast. I've been dying to have you on, man. Merry Christmas. Let's keep in touch, brother.
Same here. Sorry about the miscommunication on time, but I'm glad we did it. And yeah, look forward to doing it again. It was fun.
Chat soon, brother. Be good.
All right, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, brother. See you later.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
When you're part of a military family, you understand sacrifice and support. At American Public University, we honor your dedication by extending our military tuition savings to your extended family. Parents, spouses, legal partners, siblings, and dependents all qualify for APU's preferred military rate of just $250 per credit hour for undergraduate and master's level programs. American Public University. Value for the whole family. Learn more at apu.apus.edu/military.